I'm delighted now to welcome back to the program investigative reporter Greg Palast. He is the author of many best-selling books, including The Best Democracy, Money Can Buy, Vulture's Picnic, and a number of others. And his latest book is Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
I'm always glad to be with you. I'm just sorry I can't reach across the table and drink your coffee.
I know. I wish you were here, too. We're doing it by phone. But in any case, we have had, let's talk about voter suppression. We've had voter suppression in the United States of America for a very long time. What does it look like now in the 21st century?
It's very modern. Computers, very matrix, very minority report. And we use the term voter suppression, which is that really fancy kind of professorial word for stealing an election. So the point of billionaires and ballot bandits is that I'm going to tell you how they're stealing the election the modern way. And so, for example, the 9 steps, one of the steps is purging. They purge voter rolls. If you remember, people may remember that if they don't know Greg Palast for BBC, I did this story about how black voters were removed from the voter rolls in 2000 by Catherine Harris. She called them felons, and they were guilty of a crime, which was voting while black. And that was the election of 2000. Now, the way that they did that was by computers. They were able to, for example, and by the way, the game ain't over. As it was saying, billionaires and ballot bandits, one of the things I'm trying to explain is that you think those games, well, we caught them, right? Instead of it ending, it got worse. So, for example, in Florida, you'll see an example. They've eliminated more felon voters, including one woman, Bobby Moore, a black woman. And when I say black, we know this because right next to their name it says BLA, a black woman named Bobby Moore. And she was eliminated as a felon because someone, a white guy named Robert Moore, committed a crime in Ohio. So this woman, so Bobby committed a crime, a female, because a guy, Robert, committed a crime in, she lost her vote because he committed a crime in Ohio. Now, even more interesting is that according to the records in Florida records, this Robert, this white guy, committed his crime and was convicted in 2014. That's why I say it's like Minority Report. They know in advance the criminals of the future. This is how they are doing it. This is how they've done it. This is how they're doing it. They're getting better at it.
Who is the they?
Ah, that's why the book is called Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, because I want to connect you to the people who are paying for the theft of this election. And in this case, we've got the two philanthropists, two generous guys named Charles and David Koch, and they have put together a computer program. They've put up $60 million of their own money. They're raising $250 million for all kinds of operations. And at the center of it is this massive computer database called Themis. On the other hand, there's a second database called Data Trust, which is in the control of Crossroads USA, which is run by a guy named Karl Rove, who George Bush used to call by his flowery name, Turd Blossom. By the way, that's a Texas flower. And so Turd Blossom and the Koch brothers have put their two machines together, Data Trust, the Data Trust database, and the Themis database, to create something that looks like a database that the FBI would be envious of every American. And they're doing this not so they can send you special literature, you know, people that get the nose clippers. It's to conduct this type of purging and blocking and basically a kind of new Jim Crow racial targeting operation. And they've been fairly upfront about it. Karl Rove has actually said, and I quote him in my book, that if one quarter of 1% of the black vote can be eliminated, then Obama will lose swing states like the Carolinas. And the big state where the big steal is likely, if I had to pick one state where the steal will be biggest, it would be the enchanted states, New Mexico. Out of the 50 states I've been in, New Mexico and Colorado are the worst.
Now, you've been studying New Mexico for a long time. Tell us the history of what's been happening in New Mexico and what's happening now.
Well, in New Mexico, the problem that the public has is that the Republicans are stealing elections, and so are Democrats. So, and the problem is, you say, well, that kind of balances out. No, it doesn't, because both parties are stealing it from the same people, from the poor. See, vote theft is class war by other means. So, for example, in the Acoma Pueblo, south of Albuquerque, or Acoma, I may be mispronouncing it.
Acoma.
Acoma, right. Okay, so the Pueblo residents did not want a uranium mine in their area, in their in on their sacred mountain. Partly because uranium, sacred or not, uranium is not too sacred, and it's the uranium leaching that they've had from prior mines has basically murdered their fields and poisoned their water supplies, and their fields are dead already. So another uranium mine is not exactly something that the Pueblo residents want. But the local Democratic Party is more than thrilled to have the easy squeezy and all the political payoffs that come with mining operations. So in a local election there, you ended up with several Pueblo residents showing up at the polls with their names purged from the voter rolls, you know, because a lot of American Indians cannot, and Pueblo people can't prove their citizenship, even though they've been Americans before there was America. So they get their names purged. So they're given something called a provisional ballot, which says, oh, we'll check it later. And the provisional ballots were sent to the county for counting, and the provisional ballots of the Pueblo residents were all thrown out. Why? Because they were not in the proper envelope. Why? Because they were never given the proper envelopes. Now, that was the Democratic Party, but who lost their votes? American natives who vote almost solidly Democratic. We also have that problem. We have there's a precinct that was in New Mexico, which is mainly for soldiers, for Rio Arriba, actually, in Rio Arriba. The soldiers, who are almost entirely Mexicanos and American Indians and Pueblo residents, sent in their ballots, and of the 200 ballots that were sent in, no one voted for President of the United States. At least that's what the county government said. And when I asked your Secretary of State, Rebecca Vigil-Hiron, how you could have all these soldiers who not one voted for President of the United States, she said, well, those people can't make up their mind.
Oh, boy.
And so no one is better at taking away Hispanic American votes than Hispanic Democrats. They're really good at it. However, the result was that, for example, in 2004, George Bush won New Mexico officially. But that's with massive, there were at least, I counted, well over 30,000 ballots cast and not counted. The soldier vote, the Pueblo vote, all Democrat, that's all Democratic vote. Up in the Navajo reservation area, you have something like one in five ballots were disqualified. And so you have one of the worst situations in New Mexico, because both parties are making sure that the underclass doesn't get to vote, because the 1% knows that if the 99% gets to vote, it's pretty easy to figure out the election, because 99 is a lot bigger than 1. So, but the 1% in New Mexico has stronger control of your state than almost any other elite I've seen in America.
When you look at the rest of the country, it does seem to be skewed. Well, as it is in New Mexico, you say that both parties are involved. But when you look at the whole big picture, it does seem to be Republicans and people with Republican interests who are behind the vote stealing and not Democrats.
Let's put it this way. I wouldn't say that it's a Republican vote theft. It's billionaire vote theft. And the billionaires, obviously, at this time in history, have a greater interest in promoting Republican candidates. So at this moment in history, and they're just better at it. I mean, the Democrats, I mean, you have Karl Rove and the Koch brothers pushing Mitt Romney with Themis and Data Trust. Together they are spending, ready, $500 million. Just those two super PAC operations, $500 million. With these giant databases. Democrats are still playing with their floppy disks. So Democrats do retail vote theft. The Republicans do futuristic, computerized wholesale vote theft, and so it's not even close. If you were to actually do, you're correct, if you were to do the numbers, it's about 20 to 1 at this moment. That's quite different than what it was a few decades ago when the Democrats were better at it, but at the moment, it's overwhelmingly, and when I say Democrat, it's not Republicans who steal the vote. It's the people that want, who eliminate Democratic voters. Sometimes it's a Democratic Party, but it's often usually the rich. For example, the Koch brothers are not Republicans. They are not Republicans. Very important. Despite the fact that David Koch was hugging Mitt Romney as he was heading towards his acceptance speech. They are libertarians. David Koch, in fact, ran against Ronald Reagan. I kid you not, saying that Ronald Reagan was a left-wing socialist, and he ran against Reagan for president on a libertarian ticket a couple decades ago. That's David Koch. These people are to the right of Attila the Hun, and they are, but they are not for one party or another. They are for themselves. The big Mitt Romney organization, that super PAC, is called Restore Our Future, and it is funded by a lot of guys who aren't even Republicans because they're billionaires who want to restore their future. But they've backed Romney because right now, the Republican Party has decided to basically, I mean, you can rent them, the rich rent Democrats, but they can buy the Republicans.
Right. We're talking to investigative reporter Greg Pallast. Something you point out in your book, which I think is very important, is that at this point, winning elections on a national level is not about getting votes. It's actually about suppressing votes.
Right. I mean, there's virtually no swing votes left in America. In terms of this election, people know who they want for president. If they don't know, then they're either in a coma or they probably can't figure out how to work a doorknob to get to the polling station anyway. There's no such thing as a swing voter left in America because you know where your interest lies. It's so clear. It's not like the parties are confused. So the way you win votes is, the way you win elections now is to make sure the Republicans have figured out, again, that 1% versus 99, is to make sure that the voters they don't like don't get to the polls, or if they do, that their votes don't count. For example, you have something called spoilage. Spoilage means, votes don't get counted because they've been spoiled. Now, you don't spoil a vote by leaving it out of the fridge. It's one of the nine ways you steal an election, by the way. In Billionaire and Ballot Bandits, the subtitle is How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. I go through each one of these. Spoilage is one of them, spoiling votes. The way a vote spoils is, for example, a hanging chad, right? Remember the famous hanging chads?
Right.
But a hanging chad is actually a stolen vote. What it means is someone punched through and didn't realize that a little bit of the piece of paper that they punched through is still hanging there. It's so clear when you look at it that they're trying to vote because they punched through. But to play a game and say, well, that doesn't count because a little bit is hanging. Everyone laughed about hanging chads. Well, you know, in those little pieces of hanging paper was the presidency of the United States. And one of the worst states in America for vote spoilage is New Mexico, where so many ballots are enchanted that they simply spoil very quickly. And overwhelmingly, they spoil in Latino precincts. You have, for example, something like the spoilage of the vote in New Mexico. I did a racial breakdown by precinct, and it's about 89% of all spoiled votes in New Mexico are voters of color, mostly Hispanics, Native Americans, and the few blacks and Asians that you have in New Mexico.
How do they spoil here?
Ah, well, you don't give, you know, the old thing of giving Indians blankets with smallpox, that doesn't go anymore. Instead, you give them crappy Shooptronic voting machines that get jammed and don't record the votes. You have magical machines, computers. Now, a lot of people think that we call one of the nine ways, I call it prestidigitizing, computer vote theft. Now, people think of computer vote theft, and my friend in New Mexico, who's the general counsel of LULAC, the big Mexicano organization, Santiago Juarez. As Santiago says, people think of computer vote theft as some type of Hollywood thing where there's some guy underneath the computer like Lex Luthor, and he's carefully using some fancy program to change your vote from Obama to Romney, or, you know, from Mickey Mouse to Donald Duck or whatever. But he's going to change your vote. That may exist, but in New Mexico in particular, the way it's done is the best way to steal a computer vote is to unplug the computer. The computer just doesn't work. You have the situation in New Mexico where when people vote on computers, stuff goes wrong and votes don't count. What's interesting about the computers is that it seems to have a way of figuring out that votes don't count if you're a Hispanic voter versus white voters. Where we have white voters in the suburbs of Albuquerque, we've been, in the last presidential elections, we've recorded 101% voter turnout. So you have all these ghosts who vote Republican. More votes counted than people who vote. Whereas if you go into the poorer precincts in Albuquerque, you will find just the opposite. You have about a 500% higher loss of Hispanic votes on computers. It's that the vote simply doesn't get recorded for some reason. In Florida, they use tricks like simply not giving black precinct workers the passwords. They go, oops, and the polls don't open for 4 hours. Votes in Florida and Sarasota, in the poorer neighborhoods, there was just for some reason, about 18,000 votes weren't counted in a few precincts, almost entirely African-American, electing a Republican to replace Catherine Harris in her congressional seat. So that it's very funny the way these computers work, which is not, again, that they have to bother programming them. They just give the crappy ones no training. There's a glitch, it doesn't get fixed. Votes get lost, unrecoverable, and it always happens. Computer voting machines are absolutely not colorblind. And of course, as the richer areas tend even not to use computers, but to use optical scanners with in-precinct readers, which is really the safest form that we have of counting your vote at the moment. And those are expensive. But they go into the they're right in the suburban precincts. So this is how the game is played.
Now, in New Mexico, we have paper ballots at this point. That was passed under Governor Richardson. So we fill out our little oval things with a pen and then feed them into a reader. And then you get a receipt and you go home. And those paper ballots are kept and they can be recounted. Has that not helped?
Yes. It has. You dropped your spoilage rate in New Mexico and your vote loss rate in New Mexico substantially. And that happened, by the way. By the way, there's a lot of the New Mexico story in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits because it's such a rich place to discuss vote theft and manipulation. When I did the investigations and I reported these things both in your local papers and internationally, I used New Mexico, by the way, was the poster boy for election theft in America that we used for our broadcast from BBC London. So I have a lot of New Mexico and Billionaires and Ballot Bandits for just that reason. And what I also like, though, is the story of how people said enough is enough. And you've had a massive improvement in your voting system because people pushed Richardson to the wall and said, we want something where we stand a chance of getting our vote counted. And by the way, given that, I have in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. In fact, right now you can go to ballotbandits.org, ballotbandits.org, and download for free, even if you don't get the book, download for free 7 Ways to Beat the Ballot Bandits. And way number one is don't go postal. You've got this new system in New Mexico that you guys fought for. You want it. Use it. Don't mail in your ballot, because if you mail in your ballot and there's a glitch on it, boom, it's spoiled. It's thrown away. Goodbye, kiss it off, or they don't open it, they don't get it in time, or you ask for a ballot, they don't send it to you in time, and then you can't vote in precinct and you're shafted. So don't go postal. That's one of 7 things we tell you to do at ballotbandits.org. But, you know, New Mexico is a great story that way because it was the worst state and then massive improvement because of public reaction.
We're talking to investigative reporter Greg Pallast. Now, leaving New Mexico for a moment, tell us some more about some of the characters you describe in your book. And I have to say, I mean, I have become quite cynical over the years, and you see the corruption, and you talk about it on the radio, and you look at it in the eye, and yet, it's almost like reading your book, I realize the extent to which I am in denial about this, and to which I've bought into the kind of myth of American democracy, because almost anybody reading this book is going to just say, that can't be true. And you've got your footnotes, and you've got your facts checked to the hilt. But it's still kind of shocking and depressing to read. Two of the people who I'd like you to talk about are Harold Simmons and Paul Singer. Who are these people?
The Iceman and the Vulture. Harold Simmons, he's known as the Iceman. I didn't make up that name, nor did I make up the name of the Vulture. These are names that nicknames that they proudly wore, though now they're trying to go legit, so they prefer other, doctor this or that. But in the case of the Iceman, these are the billionaires who are buying this election. Iceman Simmons, Paul the Vulture, and I report for BBC TV, as you know, and Rolling Stone, and I work. I did this investigation with the law professor Bobby Kennedy, who wrote an introduction to the book. So needless to say, because these guys have more lawyers than I have toenails, I have to be very, very careful about my facts, and which they don't like, but they still have not figured out a way to stop me from the reporting. Iceman Simmons he's the guy who's put up the money for the Karl Rove data trust machine, which is basically a racial profiling vote challenge machine. That's what it really comes down to. Now, why does Iceman Simmons want to elect Mitt Romney and a Republican Congress? The answer is because he's in the poison business. He is the owner, was the owner of National Lead, or which he now renamed NL. As you know, hundreds of thousands of kids ended up with mental retardation of various levels because of lead paint from National Lead's paint, which is, Dutch Boy White. It has a wonderful white glow because it had lead in it, and it caused massive poisoning throughout America. So what he needed was a president who would push so-called tort reform and get him off the hook on billions of dollars in lawsuits. The second thing he needed, Simmons is the radioactive waste king of America. He has a 25-square-mile waste dump in Texas where he wants all the nuclear waste from America dumped in. Now, it's on the Oglala water aquifer, America's giant, Mid-America's giant water supply. And he wants to put a uranium dump there and a toxic dump. He wants every toxin in America he wants them all. He wants, if it's something that'll kill you or poison you, he wants it. The problem is that once again, he wants to eliminate the Environmental Protection Agency, which is part of the Republican platform, completely eliminated. And with it, not just the agency, but all the rules. He is a libertarian, what I would call a lucrative libertarian. In other words, by eliminating all laws, he can do whatever he wants with impunity. And he doesn't have to worry if it poisons someone, destroys the water supply, whatever it is. And therefore, he needs himself a Congress. So he went to Karl Rove, wrote a check for 20. Rove said, "I need money." He gave him a check for $20 million. Said, "I'll give you more if you need it, whatever it takes to eliminate Obama." Not that Obama is Mr. Green Tree Hugger, but compared to Iceman Simmons and the politicians he intends to buy, Obama's Johnny Appleseed.
Let's talk now about the Vulture. Who is the Vulture?
Okay, it's interesting. If for those who read my last book, which we discussed was last at the cafe, A Vulture's Picnic, I was focusing on Paul the Vulture Singer, little knowing that he had made a decision that he needed to buy a White House. He has several residences in the White House, to make a nice addition. His other colors already. And why does the vulture need a White House? The answer is, and this is the story of the vulture, the newest, latest update. Especially, by the way, if anyone's read Vulture's Picnic, you will definitely want to read this, the latest on Vulture Singer. But you don't have to have read the prior, because I lay it out. Paul the Vulture Singer what he has done is he's gone after the poorest nations in the world. He's like a repo man, and using bribery muscle, whatever it takes, he's gotten himself the right to collect. He bought up bonds from nations with famines and civil wars, and now he wants to collect from those nations all their resources. And so, for example, in the case of the Congo, where I just was in the Congo for Democracy Now, I was in the Congo, and what Singer, the vulture, did was seize the money, a shipment of cobalt, which was meant to pay for cleaning the water supply of the Congo to end the cholera epidemic, but he seized it. He seized that money. Now, that activity, the way he's done it, I won't go into all the details, but the way he's done it is now been made illegal in most of the world, even the Tory government of Britain. You know who's called him a vulture and a vicious near criminal? Paul Wolfowitz.
Right.
Hank Paulson, who is CEO of Goldman Sachs and Bush's Treasury Secretary. The Wall Street Journal calls him a vulture. And though, of course, Singer until recently took the label vulture kindly. The thing is that there is a president and a secretary of state who is letting this guy run amok around the world and has now, but now this year, in April of this year, Obama and Secretary of State Clinton went into a federal court and said, Singer the vulture and his methods are literally threatening the entire world financial system. You got to stop them. So they went to federal court. So Singer's response was to say, well, there's all I have to do, they can stop me or I can stop them. So he founded the Mitt Romney Super PAC Restore Our Future, wrote the first $1 million check, number one donor to the Republican Governors Association, and he's become now, he was not a Republican even, now he's become the big sugar daddy of the Republican Party. But not only that, he is Mitt Romney's key economic advisor. So this guy, who is literally an outlaw in the rest of the world, is, for Mitt Romney, a job creator. So that story is in, billionaires and ballot bandits. Now I wanted to, if you're a good Democrat, plug your ears, because I'm going to tell you the bad side of this story, which is that Obama and Clinton did the right thing by saying that the vulture has to be put out of business. He is literally threatening the world's financial system. The negative is that Obama didn't act on this until J.P. Morgan and Citibank were attacked by the vulture, and they said, that's it. They've now crossed the line. You can go after kids with cholera in the Congo. And I have photos of kids with cholera in the Congo who are their victims. And you can go after Argentina. You can go after Greece. And you can do all these things. And you could go after, and by the way, Paul Singer's big score was ripping off. He sucked all the money out of the GM pension for auto parts workers. Nice guy. They can do all that, and no one complains. But the minute he decided to threaten Citibank and J.P. Morgan, Obama moved and said, that's it. He's now crossed the line.
Now, explain to us, Greg Palast, what Paul Singer did in Greece and what he tried to do in Argentina.
Ah, so what Paul Singer did in Greece, and again, like the vulture, I mean, it's very important to understand he is a vulture. In the technical financial sense, what Paul Singer did was buy up a bunch of Greek debt after the country, as you know, collapsed. And so he was able to buy up Greek bonds for 15 cents on the dollar or 15 cents on the euro. And, of course, the European government said, oh, well, we have to save Greece. Not that they want to save Greece, but they had to save themselves. So they said, okay, we'll cut a deal where bondholders take some loss on the face value of their bonds, but will otherwise pay off these bonds. So Singer bought the bonds for 15% of their face value, and the Greek and the European community said, okay, well, we'll buy those bonds off you and give you, you know, we'll give you 20%. So that's one-third profit for a couple weeks' work, several million dollars for nothing, right? And Singer said, forget about it. I want it all. I'm not going to take 20. I'm not going to take one-third profit in a couple weeks. I want 500% profit. I want 100% of the face value. I want 500%. And if not, I bring down Europe. There were something like 800 bondholders. Only Singer and his partner held out. Only Singer and his partner said, we will bring down the entire financial system of Europe, which will bring down, of course, the entire system of the Northern Hemisphere, unless you pay us everything. And they paid him. It was straight up extortion. And they gave in. But it was on the day that they gave in that Obama and Clinton said, because the other banks were really upset, that they went in and said, you can't do this to Argentina. And so Obama and Clinton went into a federal court and said, don't touch Argentina. Because what they did with Argentina, as you know, had enough brains to tell the banks that were overcharging them usurious rates, stick it, we're not paying. And as you know, the great result, they always say if third world nations say we're not going to pay these usurious bank charges, that they will collapse. Instead, while America was on its knees and Europe was on its knees, the Argentine economy has boomed. Now, here's the interesting thing. While they told the banks to stick it, they did say, if our economy recovers, we'll give you a piece of it. We're basically saying we're not going to pay these crazy debts, but we will give you a piece of our economy if we succeed. And they did. So they started paying the big banks like Citibank and J.P. Morgan. We're actually making out quite well after their screaming and hollering because they stopped strangling this country so it could actually breathe and grow. So they actually ended up making money off this. But then comes Singer the Vulture and says, but I hold these old bonds, and I want that money. I want everything in Argentina's treasury and central bank. I kid you not. He demanded that the U.S. Federal Reserve take the gold bricks. I'm kidding. I can't make this up. Take the gold bricks out of the vault in New York and give it to Singer. And he said, I want all the money that's been paid to Citibank and J.P. Morgan. That's mine, too. That was his mistake. When he went after Argentina, he went after the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve, he went after the U.S. Treasury, that's okay. But the minute he said, I want J.P. Morgan's money and I want Citibank money, they went to Obama, and that was the end. So now you have this huge battle, and this is laid out in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. You have a huge battle between the establishment banks and these renegade vulture hedge funds, so that there is a huge split in American capitalism right now represented by the two parties. And that's what's good. That's the real election that you don't see. It's not about abortion and Roe v. Wade and any of this stuff, okay? And it's about the establishment finance and the renegades and the resource bandits like the Koch brothers, Paul the Vulture Singer, and these hedge fund guys who just want it all. In fact, there's a great line in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. We had, when I was an investigator, we had Charles Koch's vice president wired, wearing a secret wire. And he asked Koch why basically he was stealing money, you know, from the poor. You'll get the story of what exactly he was doing in the book. Why are you doing it? You know, you're a billionaire. Why do you need a few bucks from some old lady? And Koch said, because I want my fair share. And that's all of it. And that's that crew. And that is the crew that is putting together the entire Romney operation. Again, I'm not writing a partisan thing. I'm just telling you where it's at right now with the big boys and their money. And it's not about Republicans. It's not about Democrats. It's about a group of financiers who've decided to basically, through vote manipulation, basically plan a coup d'etat.
Now, not that you are a psychiatrist or anything. But what is wrong with these people? I mean, they're already billionaires. What do they want to buy that they don't already have?
Well, I'll tell you one story. Actually, this is from Vulture's Picnic, about the sack, Stephen A. Cohn. I met the Sachs ex, one of his ex trophy wives, and which are a great source of information.
Right.
And she said that when they would go every weekend, here's this billionaire who would go to his mommy's house for dinner once a week, and mommy would tell him, "All I know is money makes the monkey jump. Money makes the monkey jump." And he would then leave mommy's house and get in his limo or whatever and burst into tears because no matter how many billions he had, he could never make mommy's monkey jump. So these guys, I mean, you may think that they're pathological, and like Charles Koch saying, "I want my fair share," and that's all of it. He couldn't stand it. He actually took $30 from an Indian lady. I kid you not, in Oklahoma.
Right.
And by the way, this story I haven't broken yet, but I'll just give you a hint. Charles Koch siphoned money, directed money out of the boys' club. Now, why would a guy who's worth $20 billion do that? You may call it pathological, but if you've seen the film Chinatown, it's like these guys consider themselves ubermensch. They actually take pride in the fact that the normal terms of morality, which apply to mortals like you and I, simply don't apply to them. They actually think of themselves as people who operate on a different level. And by the way, they believe that if they, this elite, truly ran the world, and didn't have to put in so, if they ran it unimpeded, because they do run the world, but it's not unimpeded, if they ran it without annoyances like KUNM and KSFR, even better. You know, you're even a bigger problem because, you know, he has a, you know, the Kochs have houses within the district. And I hope that, I'm sure they're listening in with their little antenna, you know, they're paying people to listen in. If you're paying to listen in, Mr. Koch, at least you should pay for the antenna and donate. In fact, Paul Vulture Singer called BBC and said, "We have a file on Greg Palast." I'm sure this will get added into the file. These guys, you know, really do think that none of the rules apply and that they are doing the world a favor if they really ran everything, that we'd get rid of all these silly, insane rules we have. And we have to destroy the world first. Every one of them is a believer in the philosophy of Joseph Schumpeter, who is a crypto-fascist who was at the University of Chicago, as was I, by the way. I studied under Milton Friedman, so I know all these guys. Schumpeter had the theory of creative destruction. And so far, all I've seen is the destruction. I'm waiting for the creation. But that's the idea. In other words, if we completely wipe away everything we have, even if it's very painful, even if Europe collapses, Greece, then Spain, Portugal, then everything collapses, even if Latin America goes under, even if Argentina collapses into a non-state, which is Hillary Clinton's concern as well, that if Singer succeeds, Argentina will be bankrupt and it will become kind of a terrorist haven, okay? That's one of their fears. They think that that's good because when it's all swept away, they can begin again with this new world order of complete free markets, and it will be this wonderful post-apocalyptic world. And these guys truly believe that.
They don't know a whole lot about ecosystems, do they?
Well, remember that these guys are the ones who are funding all the global warming denial business, because facts are very difficult for them to deal with. The reality of this planet, the reality of suffering, that reality is not, does not admit to their worldview. It does not submit to their worldview. So if the facts don't fit, you create a front group to change the facts. Half the time I have so much time that I end up spending unmasking their front groups. because what they have to do is if you can't change reality, you could at least change people's view of reality. So that, you know, Mitt Romney's last words were, well, you know, Obama's concerned about the oceans. Well, if you live on this ocean planet, you might want to be concerned about the oceans too. But
right.
You know, in other words, they have to change the perception. So that's one of the things is that also the control of the press. And thank God for KSFR, because you're not controlled and you're not owned. You're not the petroleum broadcast system, right? These guys have really seized control even of the so-called liberal media. And don't forget that the owner now of the New York Times even is Carlos Slim. The richest man in the world, who is Mexican. And by the way, the amount of foreign money coming into this election is astonishing. And that has been discussed. See, when people talk about, as I explain in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, there's almost no discussion of the fact that Citizens United allowed non-citizens to donate as much as they want to U.S. campaigns. Let me repeat that. Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court allows non-citizens for the first time ever to legally donate to U.S. campaigns. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, raised that point, which is probably why God gave her pancreatic cancer. But so that in itself is a danger that no one is addressing, because while we have a lot of homegrown billionaires who are very, very bad news, the foreign billionaires and the foreign interests are just as dangerous, because they can now give, as long as, for example, the People's Liberation Army of China has a clothing line incorporated in America called New Order, believe it or not, which is sold at Walmart. Okay, New Order, which is basically the Chinese government, can give as much money as they want to political campaigns. Romney's Restore Our Future is backed by a corporation called F8. No one knows what F8 is. When I looked up its principal, a guy named Diego Villaseñor, you'll see in Ballot Bandits that he is, you might recognize it, because it turns out that Diego Villaseñor, who gave $1 million to Mitt Romney, is actually just a character in Grand Theft Auto. He's a cartoon. But that's completely legal, by the way. A cartoon may give $1 million to Mitt Romney. But the problem is that I suspect that behind the cartoon is the master drawer.
We're talking to investigative reporter Greg Pallast. So getting back to this whole question of vote suppression, vote stealing, election manipulation, what would it take in this country to have really actually fair and accurate elections?
We'd have to have an electorate which is fed up with the theft and fed up with the game and gets itself knowledgeable and informed. KSFR is part of that movement. You did see it in New Mexico when people said enough with the kind of joker boxes we were using to cast our votes and switch to a ballot system that cut the number of spoiled ballots in half. And that changed elections in New Mexico, by the way. The other is you need to be informed. You need to know who these guys are. You know, I investigated the Koch brothers and first wrote about them in 1996. I couldn't get anyone to pick up that story in the U.S. Finally, just last year, the New Yorker ran a story, and finally people said, oh, these guys, the Koch brothers, that's interesting. But how many people now know about Paul the Vulture Singer, Iceman Simmons, John Paulson? These are guys who are buying this country. But if you know about it, people tend to react against it, and they do say enough is enough. They're going to say, no, I'm not going to vote for the guy that the billionaire stuck on my ballot, even if they're going to throw away my ballot. Make them steal it. That's why I want everyone to go to ballotbandits.org and get the 7 ways to beat the ballot bandits, because the one thing they want you to do is be discouraged and say, the hell with it, they're going to steal my vote, or the billionaires all run it. If we keep voting and voting in mass numbers, that will draw the right people. You know, leaders don't lead. Leaders follow. And, Paul Krugman and I once got together, and he said, what America needs, we need to find another Franklin Roosevelt. And I said, no, Paul, if we build a big enough movement, another Franklin Roosevelt will find us. That's how it works.
Very interesting. Now, in terms of the seven ways to beat the ballot bandits, so one of the things that you said is don't vote by mail, but rather vote early and vote in person, register, and make sure you're registered. Because some of these people who have already been purged, I mean, let's say you go, because you can do this in New Mexico. I checked the other day to see if I was still registered because we've had some prominent people who were involved in politics be purged for no discernible legitimate reason. So let's say you go online, you find out that you actually are no longer there. You're no longer registered to vote. Can you re-register? What do you do then?
You better do it now, though. You want to do it on time. So, for example, in New Mexico, Paul Maez found that he was purged, which was, since he was a county elections commissioner, that was pretty shocking to him.
Right.
But the state took him out because, again, Paul Maez is a Hispanic name. And they have lots of ways of targeting those voters, and they remove their names. And so he got caught up in it. Hector Balderas, who's his mother, and he's your state controller, his mother was purged, again, because they targeted some of the poorest towns in New Mexico, and that's how the game is played. So don't assume if you've been voting for years, oh, I voted in the last six elections. So what? 22 million people have been purged in the United States the past 2 years. And that could be you. So you better go check it and then re-register. Don't mail in your ballot. Take either fill it out and take it in or go in and do it in person. There's other rules there. And one of the most important is to make sure that other people register. That's a very serious business. So make sure, check for your loved ones. Voting, like bowling and making, should not be done alone.
Greg Pallast is an investigative reporter. He's author of many books, including Vulture's Picnic, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Armed Madhouse, and his latest book is Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps, which, by the way, has a great comic book inside. Tell us about that.
That's right. I decided, this is scary enough. That if you didn't get the picture by listening to Greg Pallast, we'll draw it for you. So I had Ted Rall, brilliant comic artist, insert a 50-page comic book with telling some of our stories and laying it all out. And if you get the electronic version, which will be out September 18th as well, you'll get it in full color, the comic book. And even in black and white, though, it's really cool. So it's an enjoyable book. At the end of it, it also has the organizations that you can work with, like LULAC of New Mexico, and a big up to Santiago Juarez. It has our media co-sponsors where you can and media resources where you can keep abreast and alive and not stupid about the election. And that's very important. So we have these resources. And always, by the way, if you go to ballotbandits.org, you'll be able to get a poster that you can stick up, the seven ways to beat the ballot bandits. You can obviously get copies of the book, but also the latest information. This, by the way, the book is unusual because it's being put out by a not-for-profit foundation. No one's making money off this book, believe me. This is definitely, to try to save our democracy if we can, and there's no sense, we're not trying to make a buck off it. We're trying to make a nation out of it.
Greg Pallast, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Again, Mary Charlotte, you're the best. Thanks.